Welcome to Tech Wrap the podcast. We are online at techwrap.net. You can find us every week on all your favorite podcast platforms. That certainly does include iTunes, sites like player.fm. And there's also a great little Australian-made app from South Australia called Pocket Casts, which you can download quite affordably and check out. Hello, Will. Nice to be a part of it again.
Good morning.
Afternoon, evening.
Morning. Good afternoon, good night, wherever you're listening to, anywhere in the world. You almost caught me mid-drink there. I was just having a drink and you're like, hello, and I'm like, oh, better finish this drink real quick.
Don't you love technology? And what you can hide too when you're recording audio.
Yeah, like I'm not wearing any pants right now and no one knows that.
No, not even I do. Thankfully.
No one thankfully would ever know that I'm not wearing any pants while you record this podcast. How's your week been?
The week has been interesting. It's been very action-packed. But, you know, things keep going. Plenty of technology out there, and we're here to talk about it as we do every week with our podcast.
Yeah, just really quick. Just something that just popped into my head. Do you remember maybe a couple of seasons ago when we were all into drones and that, and you had that... You bought a drone and then you lost it in a field.
Do you have to keep reminding me about my cheap drone?
I don't know. It just popped into my head. I was just wondering if you ever... I can't remember if you ever found it or if you ever then purchased the drone after the fact.
Okay. So I can
answer. You lost it and you're like, I'm done with drones for now.
I can answer both of them right now. Right. No, I never found it. And no, I never purchased one again. Although I had considerations on a couple of occasions to get another one. Although one of the guys at work who owns one said, you know, I love the idea of getting a drone. I've probably used it a few times, but it's not worth buying one in its full price, you know, spending $1,000, $1,500 on one to own one because I don't ever use it enough.
So maybe we can play with some drones next weekend here at the Tech and Gadget Expo in Melbourne.
Oh, unless, perhaps. You know, perhaps so.
I feel like they're going to have all the drones there, unless something completely random happens. I think we'll be attending.
Yeah, I think we'll get.
I know we can never say 100%, but like I'm feeling like we will. I'm feeling like
you're feeling it in your powers.
Us, at least one of us will go. I'm feeling
for
it.
Sure.
What's been going on this week in tech? What's come across your desk?
What's been going on in the world of tech? Well, it's been a very interesting one for the payments processing firm Cascal here in Australia. You might have actually heard this one on the news if you've been following what's been going on around the place. So Woolworths was the topic of conversation because many of the customers who were affected by the saga shopped at Woolworths, and they made transactions in March of 2017. And for some reason or another, Cascal has, I guess, dug up this the previous transactions of March, and they've run processing again. And so many customers were billed twice for transactions they made in March, which left a few people in a situation where they didn't have any money in their bank account after such transactions have been processed. Because you've got to take into account, you know, some people can go to the supermarket, you know, every day of the week or a couple of times a week. They can do fairly substantial shops and to have an entire month's worth of payments just docked out of your bank account all of a sudden can leave you with nothing, especially when you don't have other avenues in which to be able to, I guess, afford to pay for things, whether it's credit cards or whatnot. The company swiftly got onto the process and within 24 hours had notified people that they were going to reverse the transactions. It does take a few days for the money to come through, and they told people, you know, if you've got any dramas, you know, not being able to pay for anything, contact your bank and they might be able to enact some hardship situations. But that's a very nasty one. It's a nasty, alarming one.
I don't really know what Cascal is.
They're a payments processing firm.
So like what, like a PayPal or something?
They're the link. Yeah, a bit like that. They're the link between the bank and your particular transaction. So they provide the connection between the FPOS device and the money coming out of your bank. They provide those electronic paths.
So, wait, Woolies uses this system on their back end for payments?
They use this company to process the payments, yes.
So anyone who might have spent money there with their normal FPOS or bank card,
yes,
is what you're saying, could have got charged twice?
Yes. Anyone who made transactions using their card in Woolworths in the month of March could have been affected. And you had to look at your bank account to find out whether that was the case.
Jesus. So, but if you say, you know, people don't look at their bank accounts, you could have been affected, and what, they're going to go back and rectify it and refund everyone the double charging?
Yeah, they went back and reversed all the charges that they took in the last week or so. But it left people in the lurch.
Yeah, that's weird. I'm not really one to check my statements ever on anything. And now you kind of scared me. I kind of always want to check my statement. Like, I just pay for things and then I assume that's how much money I have left.
Here's the thing.
Imagine if you got, you bought like hundreds of dollars worth of shopping and you got charged the hundreds more. And then, but for me, I'd be like, oh shit, I only got $200 left in my bank account. And then maybe a week later, I'll be like, oh, $500 because they refunded me. I'm like, woohoo. I don't know where it came from. It's just mystical money that I got out of nowhere.
But here's the thing.
As much thought I'll give it.
In our electronic age, you should always be checking the progress of your bank account.
Right. It's easier than ever because, most people have their banking on their mobile app, on their phone, and you can just easily look at all your past transactions. I know, you're right. I should be more proactive with that sort of stuff. And especially, like, if I ever stay at hotels and stuff, and they do that, oh, we're just going to pre-charge your credit card, pre-authorize like $100, or if you stay at a really fancy place, it might be $300. And then I'm always paranoid about them. Maybe something happens in the hotel and they charge me something for it, or the pre-authorization doesn't refund. I should really sort of follow up on that sort of stuff, huh?
Yeah, and it takes multiple days.
Are you very active with that stuff? Like, how often are you looking at all your transactions and, you know, yep, I bought that. Wow, wait a minute here. What's going on here? How often? Is it daily, weekly?
Well, I open up my mobile phone every day and, you know, like everybody else, I do all sorts of things on it. But I do actually log into my internet banking applications. It's in my quick list of favourites and I always just have a quick glance at how the balances are going so that I know I've got stuff. I know I've got money then and I know when something's changed.
Yeah, well, I look at it and it's like, oh, shit, where'd all this money go? I don't want to look at my bank statement. I avoid it altogether. Oh, wow, that's crazy. I completely missed that. And that would suck, but hopefully. Wait, so has it been rectified now? Are they still working on it?
They, within about 24 hours, they started reversing the transactions that had been affected. So obviously had to do a lot of digging and work out, what exactly happened and getting straight into that reversal process. But the reversal process, when you're putting money back into cards after it's been taken out, it can take 3 or 4 days to happen. So there would have been some people left in the lurch for several days, and there was a lot of angry and annoyed people, and you can understand it, can't you?
They're more than happy to take your money instantly.
Oh, they take it instantly.
The second they got to give it back to you, all of a sudden it takes like 3 days. I never understood that, really.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, just credit me the account and that's who get banking. What can you do? You can't fight them.
Don't understand the banking sector in its entirety, but that's all right because I'm a tech man.
Hey, did you see earlier on in the week, or about a week ago, actually, let me preface this by saying, do you remember our conversation we had maybe a year and a half ago? It was a Tuesday. You just had some banana bread and a flat white. It was 8 degrees, raining outside. You might recall this day.
No, we were podcasting. Not to that degree. Not banana bread.
There was a small ant. Crawling across your desk.
Now you're being ridiculous.
And there was some crumbs in the corner of your mouth, but I didn't want to say anything.
Now you're being completely ridiculous.
But we talked on the podcast about a year and a half ago, I think, about how silly it was.
Now you say, I think.
Born from frustration of me, probably me, because I tend to get frustrated on things, having to, probably that day I had to change my password, because we have a security thing where we had to change our password every 60 days to something else, even though there was no reason for it. No one knew my password, just one of those things. And that we thought, you know, we lived with.
Yeah, and there was a complexity to it as well, because you have to have a capital letter in there somewhere, lowercase letters, you've got numbers, you've got characters, and then, you know, your password has to be a minimum length, and it also can't include several other password combinations, and usually we just tack on another digit to make it work when you have to change it.
Yeah, and we were talking about how silly it was, the whole process. Well, earlier on in the week, who knew there's actually this mystical password changing didn't just appear and come out of nowhere. It was actually a guy by the name of Bill Burr who wrote this like security paper and guidelines back in, when was it, 2003, I think it was, suggesting, you know, that the more you change your password, the less likely it's going to get compromised. If you have special characters in your password, the less likely people are going to guess it. And he put just forward all these sort of suggestions and guidelines in this paper. It was then adopted by government agencies and corporations and stuff. And then they all started doing it. And then, you know, other businesses were like, maybe we should do this too. And it trickled down to the point now where everyone does it. And even signing up pages for forums online or creating accounts, they still have these sort of guidelines where you need the special characters and blah, blah, blah. So there's a guy responsible for our pain and suffering every 60 days. And it turns out he's like 74 now. And earlier on in June, they redid his paper and they were like, oh, this is silly. And they got rid of a lot of the guidelines he suggested. And he came out after this now and he said, you know, looking back, he kind of regrets making all those suggestions because of the laziness of people of just using the same password they've always used and then just put a 1 at the end of it and then a 1, 2 and it's 1, 2, 3, 4 or writing it down, like as you said, in post-it notes, which I thought was hilarious that we called him out on this all those years ago. And it's kind of nice to know that he realizes kind of how silly it was, but I wrote an article on it. If you want to check it out, it's techwrap.net. We have the audio from when we did talk about it a year and a half ago, which is golden and matches perfectly to like what he is saying and a little bit more about it all and things like that. And another thing I kind of touched on at the end was like basically they're moving away from having to change your password every 60 to 90 days and using random characters, and they're suggesting just have a random sequence of phrases or words, something long, like Trent, apple, banana, chair, something, you know, or articles, monkey, mat, glass, hat.
You know,
something random that's a string that you can remember, and that's way more secure than a shorter password with random characters. So that's what they're saying you should move on to now.
You know what my humble opinion on it is? I don't think simple text passwords are sufficient because people have built tools which are more than capable of being able to, I guess, guess passwords based on normal word combinations. So, you know, if someone leaves the system unsecure to the point that it, you know, won't be locked out by so many password attempts, well, that system's going to be able to crack that. But you don't have to go to the point of silly characters and other combinations because, you know, a common, a word password or at least a scramble of letters with a few numbers is a fairly strong password in its own merits. And you don't have to be, you know, ridiculous with the let's change the password every 60 days and let's have, a password that's got so many characters and, you know, you're not going to be able to enter this and that, but you can enter the other. Because, you know, all the other security processes, if they're in place, like restricting the amount of times you can try and log in before it fails, you know, they're all going to be fairly sturdy and they've got them in online systems, in web backends these days. Your installations for your blogging software by default can have password lockout policies in them and you know, how many websites have actually been hacked by, you know, guessing that username password combination compared to those sites that are hacked because they know it's open source software and they find a hole in the code somewhere, for instance.
Yeah, here's the thing, like how much of it is cracking, because it seems very rarely people get into somewhere because of a password compromisation. People get into companies and businesses using exploits around that, like zero-day exploits, brand new system they might just put up and they haven't yet patched or found some security holes, and they'll figure out a vulnerability, and then people will get in that way, and then they'll figure out everyone's password, or they'll acquire their password through social engineering and things like that. It's very rare that people will get up straight into your password, and then even if they do, they're only into your account. So in terms of companies being protected, they need to protect themselves elsewhere from just the user, right? The average work at that company having a weak or strong password is kind of irrelevant. Do you know what? Also, like, they talk about how strong your password needs to be in things like this.
Mm.
What about using two-factor authentication IP address, you know, detection, logins and things like this, or, you know, those security tokens you get where you put in like a thing on your phone, which I know you use for a few things. That having that stuff on top, you don't really need a strong password. Like, your password could be I don't know, password, right? You could have your password as password, but if you're using two-factor authentication and you can't log in with saying, yes, this is me on my phone, or getting an email or getting a code, like, you can tell anyone your password, they're not getting in your account. Yeah. So, like, do we even need, if we use that sort of stuff, if we all move towards that sort of type security, the whole, you know, what type of password you need becomes a bit redundant.
You'd be able to negate the need for changing passwords regularly if you had two-factor authentication. And these days, you know, most people have got a mobile phone. You know, even if it's an old device, it's still capable of receiving text messages. Text message gateways are cheap. They're responsive. You could make multiple ways of doing this two-factor authentication, and it negates the whole need for this whole password complexity, which doesn't end up working anyway, especially when you've got weak security policies which allow you to go and reset the password and reset all the memory of all the previous password combinations, which negates that whole policy in its essence as well in a business system, for instance, which I've found.
And here's the other thing. Now that they've kind of come to the realization that people are lazy and they just, like, having to force them to change their password is no more secure than just having one secure password and all the other characters, whatever, blah, 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 this random paper that no one's ever heard of, are businesses going to change their practices now? I think we're
probably
still
going
to be having to change our password every 60 or 90 days for the foreseeable future. Like, this whole conversation's nice and all, but, like, how long have we been doing this already, and how ingrained into this is, like, company policy to have these password rules that, it's kind of depressing that I think, you know, it's nice and all to think that this is all going to go away and we're not going to have to do that anymore, but reality is it's probably going to be sticking around for a long time to come.
Hey, at least the bloke admitted that, this system doesn't work anymore, even if he thought it was a great idea at the time, as a lot of people did when they came up with the concepts of these things in the early days before everybody commonly had a device which required this sort of authentication happening. You know, it all had to start somewhere, I guess. Hey, you're listening to Tech Wrap, the podcast. We're online at techwrap.net. Hey, you can send us an email anytime if you're keen as well. Our email address is mail@techwrap.net. You can keep in touch. You can follow us on the website. You can follow us on Twitter as well. We have a Twitter handle, Tech Wrap Podcast, and we're I'm admitting it right now. We're trying real hard to get better at that social media thing. It's a bit of a challenge sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, we'll be posting stuff. I just wrote an article. We'll put that up on Twitter. This podcast goes live. We'll put that up on Twitter. Hey, we'll tweet out pictures at the Tech and Gadget Expo straight to the Twitter. So get along, get following.
Yeah, get on it.
You have to set me up on my phone. Like, you have to give it to me on my phone so then I can tweet out what I'm doing all day. Like, getting lunch.
I don't think that's very interesting at all. I'll keep it to tech headlines and related to the
website and podcast. But yeah, lots to come.
You've got to keep it on topic.
What else has been coming across your...
Well, do you remember that recent malware case, which took the world by storm for negative forms? I mean, this took business systems down around the world. It affected some home users as well. And that was the one that was threatening people that they were going to encrypt their files if they didn't pay up. And pay up, I think it was like bitcoins and other interesting online payments. Well,
of course.
There was a bloke who basically pointed out a way of turning this thing off. And in the end, the law makers believed that he was the person who was a main contributor to this piece of malware and helped this malware spread to the degree that it did. A young British cybersecurity researcher, Marcus Hutchins, recently appeared by a court in Las Vegas, and the judge in the case set a bail of $30,000 for this fella before he appears basically on trial for the effects of being a contributor a co-conspirer to the whole malware situation. It certainly spread like wildfire, and there was people who didn't know how to get rid of this thing, and it was causing concern for everyone, especially, you know, those computer users who were not acquainted with machines and weren't sure even how to, update your Windows software. And all as it was down to was people weren't keeping Windows up to date.
I am guilty of that. I'm not a big fan of the old Windows updates.
I might say I'm a person who does turn Windows updates off, but if there's good reason to be able to enable them, like, you know, knowing that there is actual periodic system updates which are going to prevent my system from being affected by something, I will actually turn it on and run them. Now, some people don't believe this is a good thing to do. There was a conversation I was looking at in a broadcast group recently, and they were on the conversation of Windows 10, which you should know installs updates as they come and does restarts as they come as well. And in the broadcast sector, if you're using this system for live content, you know, you're running applications on it, you don't need it to just reboot randomly. So I turn Windows Update off in the settings. I also disable its service to prevent it to be able to run itself, and then just check a few other nooks and crannies to make sure it hasn't reared its ugly head. And some people say, yeah, no, that's not the way of doing it. But you kind of sit there and think, well, how else do I do it? Because Microsoft doesn't give you the ability to switch it off easily anymore because of the stuff that goes on around the world and because so many people, I guess, don't understand how it works even.
Yeah, it's almost like these hacking stories and malware and exploiting and blackmailing and this coming all over the place. Like, I don't know if you know about the guys that did the HBO hack, and they got into there and they stole like 1.5 terabytes of data or something like that. And they were trying to blackmail them saying that they it's like they earn what was it, like millions of dollars blackmailing all these other companies. Like it was like they're like a 6 month salary. They wanted their 6 month salary in Bitcoin, claiming they earned $12 to $15 million a year from blackmailing organizations whose networks they've breached and things like this. And whether or not these come, like, it's hard to tell, do these come from people not having their systems updated? Is it coming from like social engineering? Is it coming from people on the inside? Like, what is the real cause? How do you tell?
Well, you'd be thinking, you know, it's
like you can have a perfectly up-to-date system, right? 100% yeah. secure, but if somebody then tells you how to get into that system or tells them their high-level password or somebody in the company like leaks this, like what good is that?
There's a hole one way or another. You know, it's not necessarily always going to be the operating system. Something like HBO, their streaming backend, you know, people could get in through their code, for instance. But I suppose we're never going to know exactly the finer details of how that hack was undertaken. But, you know, there's always a way of getting through, even if it's someone from the inside basically passing you the information, which allows you to put the key in the door and turn it and walk right in.
Or just give you the information and then you can claim you, like, hacked it or something like that. And as you said, how do you pay these people? Do you pay them? They demand often Bitcoin.
Well, when it comes to malware, you don't pay the person. You turn your machine off, you take it offline. If you don't understand what you're doing, you at least take it offline and you find a way of being able to undo this. If you're not acquainted with how to do this, that would be where you would invest your time in going to, you know, an IT repairer, a well-trained IT repairer, not some school kid in his bedroom, because he's not going to be able to provide you with the level of knowledge that you need. But you'll be able to find someone who can remove this software and prevent this possible encryption. And the encryption does definitely happen in some cases. I have heard of people around me that have had this sort of thing happen to them, and that's not fun. But you, on the other hand, you just don't need to be paying these people, because it's not going to benefit you either way around.
Yeah, definitely don't pay them. But speaking of payments and cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin a few days ago has reached an all-time high of around $4,000.
$4,000?
Can you believe? I mean, and I'm looking kind of right now at what it's trading at, and it's currently trading at $4,206, $4,000. And this blows my mind, because I'm thinking, how long has this been happening? Wasn't it only $800 a few months ago, or was that last year or something like that? And I'm looking back now at the history of Bitcoin, and only in January it was around $750 US dollars to $900 January, and it's now August, and it's over $4,000. Can you believe that?
It's unbelievable. It's amazing how the currency has got to where it is, given you know, the simplicity of what it is.
Don't even July. Here we go. July. Oh no, May 2010. Trading at less than 1 cent.
But no one was acquainted with it back then. Were they?
Laszlo made the first real-world transaction by buying two pizzas in Jacksonville, Florida for 10,000 Bitcoin. He bought two pizzas for 10,000 Bitcoin. And now, 10,000 times 4,000. Do the maths, Geddes. That's a lot of money.
They're very comfortable with their payment system.
We'll go back and edit the amount and we'll make it look like we're really smart. But February 2011, $1. And then
where it is now.
From 2010 to 2013, it was about 10 cents, and then it got to about $100. And then from 2013 to 2016, it got from about 100 to 800. And now it's over 4,000. Could you even imagine buying up a heap of Bitcoin as early as January this year at $800?
You would be happy with your investment now.
5 months later. 6, 7, and then it's now over 4,000. A lot of people or a few people have made a lot of money.
Yes.
It's kind of depressing to think about. Let's move on to something else. You know, you hear those stories about people that had, you know, those 100 bitcoins in their wallet or something, or 500 bitcoins, and they were millionaires, or they're now worth like hundreds of thousands of dollars, it's 4,000, they're probably millionaires, and then they forgot their wallet key, or they lost the hard drive, the bitcoin. So depressing. Move on, let's move on.
Aren't you disappointed that you didn't invest in it?
Let's move on, let's forget about it.
Oh, I love that.
Let's talk about something else.
Let's talk about money again.
No. Okay.
So, you know, the trend of companies who are in the financial tech scene here in Australia are growing and growing. You probably haven't heard of a lot of them. They've been dealing online for several years, like a company called Zip Money. Now, essentially, these guys are taking on the traditional interest-free loans system and providing a much easier way in which to apply for it. And not only apply for it, but be able to use it. You can use these in essentially an online platform, meaning you can go online to a store. Say, for instance, I purchased over a year ago now a Koala mattress, and at the time paying almost $1,000 to be able to purchase this thing was a bit of money back then. So I managed to get this Zip Money loan really quickly. It took less than a couple of hours, if that, for an approval process. Then I was able to go online and tell the Koala website that I had a Zip Money account. That's where you take the money from. And then all payments from there onwards were automatically taken out of my card. So, you know, the whole process was simple, easy to use. It was online, and there was minimal interaction between me and the provider of credit. And, you know, this firm is fairly solid in their trading these days, so much so that the traditional banks have decided it's a good path of investment for the future of their products and services in the current age. And a recent deal from Westpac has given the company $40 million to play with so that they can further develop their services and, I guess, provide some of this sort of technology to Westpac themselves, you know, to boost their performance in the digital economy of today.
Yeah, I can't say I've ever been one to do those sort of quick loan things and stuff like that. And I think you were telling me about Zip Money a bit earlier on, and then I hadn't, only because you mentioned it, then I started to see it pop up in stores everywhere that you can now buy things instantly using Zip Money instead of your money. If you have no money, you want to buy a large ticket item, they have like a little code there or something you could scan. You just download the app and you could pay in store instantly with it and not have to worry about anything. And I thought that was kind of cool. And I think I sent you a picture of it, the Zip Money thing. That was Zip Money, right? So like, yeah, they're starting to grow and pop up everywhere. I don't know if it's because you told me about it and now I'm noticing it, or if they're now, because of this, starting to expand and more businesses are catching on, like you say. Either way, I don't know, is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Are people buying, is people buying things with money they don't have good promoting that? I don't know.
There is not a huge deal with not using your own money for short-term transactions. It's all down to the ability to be able to take a loan within your means. If you can do this and you can pay it back in sufficient time frames, well, there isn't a problem at all, I don't think. Of course, you're always with these forms of quick money, you're always going to catch the people who don't read the finer terms and conditions. And they're always the people who lose out because, you know, they don't read the detail. They get charged interest charges. And then in some cases, depending upon the amount of money that they request, you know, they can't pay it back, which leaves them in a situation where they're either, I guess, repossessing things to be able to do that. And that's a very sad, sad tale to things, or they're finding some sort of payback plan. But yeah, short answer, yes, if you can, if you can use your grey matter to work out whether you have, I guess, a wage or, you know, a wage which is sufficient to be able to pay it, there's no reason in these not using these sort of things. And they allow you to really, you know, get on with things and pay for them easily, especially in an online scale.
Yeah, and it's incredible that they are able to do that and then compete with banks and credit cards and things like that. I think that's the hardest thing, getting awareness from everyday people that this is another method of doing it, because most people would just rely on the old bank credit card system. So it's interesting now that the banks are getting onto it and investing in this sort of stuff. I don't know if that's going to be a good thing or a bad thing. How long do you normally have to pay back a credit card? Interest-free period? Is it 30 days or 60 days?
It depends. Most of them are 30 days.
So I'm looking at Zip Money right here. Mm. That was one thing for me because you mentioned the interest stuff.
Yep.
And it's 3 months interest-free here on purchases, which is a nice little advantage from a credit card, say, from a bigger bank.
Yes, definitely. For the most part, it's 30 to 55 days. You might get an option where you can get interest free for up to 12 months or up to 24 months, but they're usually more limited options. I can see why a big bank would get onto this right now. I mean, everything is going digital and it's growing at a staggering rate. And if you don't jump aboard the train while you've got an easy negotiation, it's certainly going to be harder in the long run. And these companies are going to impact your traditional banks in the near future unless you let it get away.
Unless the traditional banks buy them all up and then it's business as usual for the banks.
Well, yeah, that's another thing too, isn't it?
It's one thing banks hate is other people getting in on their business. But it's good to see some, Australian companies getting out there and being innovative and making splash onto the tech scene and things like that. I don't know if it's for me. I hate buying things when I don't have the money. I think I've been lucky to be in a situation where I haven't had to make a purchase with money I haven't had.
If
you had to, this would be a perfect way to do it.
Just don't fall into the
trap of spending more than beyond your means.
Yes, that's the way.
Hey, this is just like a quick tidbit thing that I saw. I wasn't sure if it should be a quick headline or not, but I think we're going to talk about Netflix a little bit. And I just want to say, did you see Disney have now given notice to Netflix that they're pulling all their titles from their streaming service?
No, I hadn't seen that, and I wasn't even aware that Disney had a large majority of content on there either.
I know. I think Disney and I think all the cartoons and things like that, but they own so many properties. And like, I think the new Star Wars, The Force Awakens is on Netflix. And I'm thinking, wow, they're going to pull that and they're going to set up their own streaming service.
And is this really the way you want to be doing things? I know it's easy to set up these streaming platforms, but, it does present more challenges, doesn't it?
It's so annoying because it just means more segregation in the market and more as if there isn't already enough different streaming services and licensing agreements out there already. Splitting up all these great shows and things and forcing everyone to subscribe. You know what? By the time we want to view everything, we're going to be paying no less than people are complaining about paying cable companies and things like that. Oh, God. It makes sense, though, for Disney being so huge and owning so much to kind of do their own. But are you going to subscribe to a Disney-only platform?
Well, you might, for the sake of thinking that all of the things that you enjoyed have disappeared, but you'll soon get bored with the idea of needing to pay for X, Y, and Z streaming platforms and how much they're eating up your bank account and realizing that, hey, I don't watch as much of the content on Z service, so why don't I cancel that one and keep those other two? Because it's just really not working for me. And in the long road, these companies could be losing money because they're not where they can be seen easily as well.
Yeah, it's going to be... It looks like they're also probably going to buy up some other companies to produce content here. It says they're also going to launch their own ESPN video streaming service in early 2018. 10,000 sporting events each year and things like this. And who knows what else they'll buy. But, yeah, you're totally right. We have What are the other ones here in Australia going? I know we kind of go through. Stan's still going. Presto was the one that went goodbye, and there's Foxtel. Presto's no more. But Stan and I think the Foxtel one, and then Netflix, and then you can subscribe to all the other ones like overseas as well. There's no way. I'm just sticking with Netflix no matter what.
Well, it's where the vast majority of things are, and it's what all your mates talk about when
Netflix
they're looking
needs
at shows.
To fight back somehow and do some more cool stuff.
They need to make it worth everyone's while for putting content on their services if they're to have any more of these situations where companies pull their content. I mean, it's what streaming platforms have had to do over time as well to ensure that big names stay on the service, because many of them have pulled out. You know, it's not always indefinitely, but they managed to do it as well. Talk of Netflix, they did actually make one of their first big acquisitions, and it's not the one that you think they would do too.
Oh, what would I think?
Well, what would you think?
Would it be another video streaming service?
Well, that's what people would usually
think. Some content maker, some production company.
Well, content maker's correct. What kind of content would you have thought that they'd be interested in?
Oh, it's I feel like this is like a trick question. So, like, what type of content company are you saying?
What sort of content company?
Oh, is it going to be, I don't know if I'm just thinking about this or I saw this a while ago. Is it like animation, like anime and stuff?
Well, they bought out a comic company.
Oh, it's close.
Essentially. They bought a comic company after all of that.
That's close.
Which is, it's not really something you would have thought they would be interested. They bought Miller World. Of course, Miller World was Mark Miller, the big comic book writer, superhero story writer. He has brought out titles such as Kick-Ass, Kingsman, and Wanted. And these are already in major films. And, you know, I guess they're looking for the content that company conceptualizes to, you know, make the next big original Netflix production and possibly produce another stream of revenue for future content. You know, on their platform. But it's certainly...
Yeah, so I imagine this acquisition to be so they can acquire the rights to all these shows and things like that to make Netflix shows out of it. But are they also keeping the company afloat to distribute hardcover comics as well?
Well, for what we know at the minute, I mean, it's business as usual for Mr. Miller's company.
Do you know what the buyout was worth?
The buyout figure, did they actually mention the buyout figure? I don't think it was actually publicly mentioned, just that
that's pretty big, though.
It was fairly tidy, though. And it's tidy for Netflix.
You could imagine, I think tidy for both companies. Netflix money, geez, billions of dollars.
And that's where the money's at the moment.
That's interesting that it's been this long for them to acquire licensing of other shows and then also produce their own original content, that they could go this long without needing to acquire someone else's rights to make stuff, which is very interesting. I don't know. I guess they want to branch out, and I guess we're losing Disney stuff and you know, increasing the cost of their subscription here in Australia and just the evolving face of streaming services in general. I guess they're constantly thinking of ways to stay at the top. And I guess acquiring this company is one way to do that. And it wouldn't be surprised if we see now other companies getting snapped up over the next year or so.
There's definitely a lot of potential for it in the online scene, I'd say.
Yeah, and even with this amazing epic news, you're still thinking of cancelling your Netflix.
Well, I am, because
we've been talking about this for weeks. Mm. Firstly, has it happened yet?
No.
Gotcha.
I've been thinking about this for months, and no, it hasn't happened.
You're talking about it.
Because my sister will use it, and she'll go, oh, you know, I've got these things that I still want to see on it. And yeah, you sort of think, And then she goes, oh, just transfer it to me. And I'm just like, And, you know, I just never get around to sorting it out. So they still keep taking their money. I can't remember the last time I honestly logged into Netflix. It would have been ages ago.
So how did you watch shows in your downtime? I think we've had this conversation before.
Well, I don't really watch a lot of stuff in my downtime. I'm one of those people who sit online in front of a computer and I read things on the internet and I waste time on social media platforms. I procrastinate about the things that I should be doing when I'm not doing them. And if I'm watching something these days, usually it's like on catch-up TV platforms or even jumping onto YouTube and watching, you know, original average person created content more so than full productions these days. I don't know. That's just me.
Yeah. Oh, well, get around to it. Cancel your subscription. Make your sister buy her own and then you can leech off that and get some sweet karma from all the other leeching people have done. I think it's your turn to start getting free stuff. You should get onto a free Spotify account. You should get onto a free Netflix account. Hey, I'll give you my password and then you can watch Netflix in your spare time. Hey, you know, sometimes there are the biggest stories of the week.
There are.
Like we've talked about thus far. Other times there are smaller stories that you could almost say the story's in the headline. And it's a little segment we have here. Sometimes. And we call it Quick Headlines of the Week. And we got an intro and a theme song. And take it away. We still don't. Are you kidding me?
Why are you making something about this? Why are you making something out of this?
Because I don't want to feel like I'm sort of just singing it every week.
But you love to sing it.
If I was, it would go a little something like this.
You love to sing it.
These are the technology headlines of the week. These are the quick headlines of the week. Geddes, give me some quick headlines. Beautiful.
Changes tones every week.
Hey, you know Uber, they're going to add an in-app chat.
In-app chat. Oh, yes, so you can communicate with the other parties.
Yeah, I'm surprised it's taken them this long because normally they just give you that creepy phone call or a creepy text message. Normally they just call you if they can't find you. But like, it's a kind of a feature that it's kind of a no-brainer. Why hasn't it been there before? So you can message your driver.
But at least the creepiness has been reduced in the sense of they can't get your phone number anymore, which is what they used to do.
Well, that's handy though. In-app chat.
Definitely. You know, there's been some awful stuff going on in the US with white supremacy. There's been some deaths and whatnot. You know, a website which had its registration through GoDaddy, who has been, I guess, pointed out as brandishing this white supremacy content, they've actually been booted off GoDaddy services after some complaints. GoDaddy has certainly dealt with the matter in a stern fashion, and they're telling these people, you know, if people don't like this sort of content and it's not acceptable to our terms and conditions, you do not have a service on our company and on several companies' platforms to be able to be sharing this sort of hate, which is not acceptable in the current age. It's not acceptable at all, really.
Get them off there. Good riddance. Hey, you know, we haven't talked about VR in a while. But get this, what they're trying to do, I guess they're always trying to innovate because it's kind of a tough space to break into mainstream. But Coldplay, the band, is doing a Chicago concert on August 17th, and they're going to stream the whole thing live in VR. So you can pretend like you're there in the crowd and you can like look around, you can look at the concert. I don't know if you're going to have to pay for it or whatever, but... I think it's like through Samsung. They partnered with Samsung, so you got the Samsung VR goggles and stuff. That's kind of cool.
And there'll be people out there that got Samsung VR goggles with their brand new mobile phones, used them for 5 minutes and put them away, and didn't do anything with them for ages. And they go, "Oh, cool! We can watch a concert now."
Yeah,
and really I'm take advantage of them. Goes. You know, have you heard of Rovio? Finnish company behind the game Angry Birds, which...
Oh, of course. If you said, have I heard of Angry Birds, but you led me into that one. I feel like a fool.
I did. They've got to the point where they've actually decided they'll go public and are planning an IPO on the stock exchange. And they're hoping to reap the rewards of it, get a major investment and, I guess... move forward with more ideas on, you know, expanding their business, which these days is beyond games. They're in movies and all sorts of other things now, which is...
Yeah, I think they released like a clothing line and blah, cartoon and
definitely
random stuff. But I don't think too many people play Angry Birds the game anymore, do they?
Well, I think the hype has died down around Angry Birds. Yeah. Even the hype has died down around Pokemon these days.
Pokemon Go, nah, level 29, capturing some gym, doing some raids, getting the legendary Pokemon that just came out. Never! Pokemon Go will never die. Hey, Facebook are launching a watch tab of original video shows. Did you see this? Did you hear about this? Surely you would have seen
Facebook.
The Facebook watch tab.
Like Facebook's trying to be in everything. They're the next Snapchat. You swipe over one side and you get all these stupid filters. And I did it tonight while I was trying to send a message. And it's like, go away. God. I've got Snapchat. I don't need this.
Yeah. Is there anything they're not trying to do? So, and we're talking about more streaming services and things like this. I don't think you're going to pay for it, but they're rolling it out currently to small groups in the US, like right now. And it's only on the desktop, I think maybe mobile, desktop for sure, and maybe on Facebook TVs and stuff like this. And they're rolling out original Facebook content, shows made for the Facebook watch tab. So right now they're kind of commissioning these shows for the initial launch, but I think down the line they're going to do kind of like a YouTube model where if your content's up there, you'll get paid revenue of the ads, like a certain percentage of what they earn. So like, people on Facebook enough, and or maybe they weren't, who's going to be watching random original content on Facebook now? What? It's a bit random. I feel like it's not going to be successful. I'm just putting that out there.
It's certainly one other method to be able to drive this content easier to audiences. I mean, you know, people don't even have to leave the website and boom, they've got it. And you know, it's going to impact other platforms as well. Do we need it though? Is it overkill? To me, it feels a little bit like that.
I guess Facebook are always going to be thinking about something to do, and if it doesn't work, they'll just let it fall by the wayside.
Yeah, they always want to be on the cutting edge.
I'm so tired talking about Facebook all the time.
Let's just talk about YouTube for a minute while we're on streaming platforms.
Yes.
So, you know, the question has always been out there. I wonder how many people are actually watching this video at the same time as me.
As me?
Well, YouTube's decided to test this theory out, and in their Android application, it'll actually indicate how many people are simultaneously watching the same video.
Any video?
Yeah, videos just stored on the YouTube platform. It will give you an idea of how many people are watching it at the same time, which is certainly very interesting and quite eerie as well. Eerie as well, if you think about what sort of content you could perhaps be watching and the fact that it's counting you and hundreds of others who might actually be watching that content. Do I want to know that there's other people doing that?
Oh, yeah, especially like once you go down the YouTube rabbit hole and it's 3 a.m. in the morning and you're watching pictures of weird people on skateboards with plungers stuck to various parts of their body, you know, like here and down here, and they're rolling on a squeaky skateboard, and there might be some like donkeys in the background making.
Can't say I've ever been there, mate.
And then, you know, you haven't gone deep enough, my friend, and they're all covered in like body paint and feathers. And then there's like just you and two other people watching it or something like that. And you're like, oh man, what am I doing with my life? That's when you hit rock bottom. But I guess you're like, hey, I'm not alone. There's two other people in this weird place with me right now.
Mate.
And I guess it's only a good thing. You can already do it for live, YouTube videos. It has a watch count and you can even chat with other people watching live. But to have it across all the other videos and stuff, it's definitely an interesting experiment. And I'm curious to see what comes of it or how long it sticks around, but I don't know if I want to know what other if people are watching what I'm watching.
I will be going into that mode in Chrome a little more often if it gets to that point where they roll it out to everyone. What's it called? Incognito?
Oh yeah, the private browsing and stuff. Because if I don't, I always have 20 tabs or 25 tabs open. So it's more so not that I don't care maybe a little bit, what if other people see, but it's more when I close my browser, I know I'm sacrificing all those tabs, so I can start with a clean slate. I think I have Chrome and I have Firefox, and if just in their normal window state, I think I have about 20 tabs in each, and it's a problem.
You sound as bad as my internet problem. I'm counting up here right now, and we spent some time working out what we were going to do with our podcast. And, you know, you have one tab open so you can provide audio, but there would be at least 15 tabs open right now. And whether all of those 15 need to actually be open, it could be one or two, but, yeah, it just gets out of hand. Gets way
we'll have
out
to do a culling
for
at
sure.
the end of the podcast.
For
which
sure.
Which is almost now.
And talk about that. It is the end of the podcast. You know what? It's always great to sit back and talk technology, but... we don't want to go on forever and a day, otherwise we won't have stuff to talk about. And of course, we've got lives outside of talking technology.
Yeah, and when you miss us during the week, you can hit up and read some of our articles on techwrap.net.
And listen to previous episodes of the podcast, including that fantastic best of that you you conjured up.
If you haven't listened, go back and do it right now. Find it, the best of seasons 1 and 2.
You endured quite some time putting that one together.
It was a labor of love, though. It wasn't I loved going back and listening to it. It was magical. And one of the reasons we're here right now and back doing the podcast, because I was so inspired of the great work and the fun we had.
For sure. And we'll definitely do it again very soon. Online at
Hopefully next week we'll be talking about the Tech and Gadget Expo. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed, although I think we've got a podcast to get there before we head to the Technology and Gadget Expo. But yeah, it'll be great to talk technology next time. We're online at techwrap.net. You can email mail at techwrap.net, and you can find us on a lot of podcast platforms. So you can always stay connected. We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email. We love you. Until next time, been a pleasure. This is Tech Wrap, the podcast.
Catch you next time.